Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. Thank you so much for joining me. It's a very special edition because we have a very special guest, David Lohr. We'll be talking with him in just a moment. But first of all, to my friends in the chat room, I know we can't chat. All we can see are the names and nobody can type anything. It's a Blog Talk wide problem and they are working on it right now. So I guess we'll just have to communicate through our minds. If we can connect mind to mind to a mind meld thing, that would work out beautifully. Also, a lot of you have been asking me about the iHeartRadio True Crime show that I'll be doing. A few weeks back, I was offered a position by a major distributor to do a one-hour true crime show on iHeartRadio.com. What happens is they put all these people on iHeartRadio, and then they pick the ones they feel will be good for distribution for all over the country, syndication, I should say. And it's kind of like a farm team for radio talk show hosts, and they have offered me a one-hour position. Well, I emailed the gentleman who basically hired me and said, look, I'm going to call you, I'm going to cry like a chick, and complain that the reason I'm not doing my show is because you think I look fat. In other words, I'm just going to do everything to you that a guy hates when a woman does it, unless you tell me what the heck is going on. Fortunately, he knows I'm a little, bizarre and offbeat, and he likes that. He has sworn to me that the iHeartRadio show will take place very, very soon. Just some issues that they're working out, nothing major, but it will happen. So Trisha's True Crime Radio will be going to iHeartRadio, and hopefully the next step, syndication. We'll just have to keep our fingers crossed on that one. And boy, do we have a very, very special guest with us tonight. Mr. David Lohr. Oh, I forgot. We have to do the goo thing. It's time for the legal goo. How could I forget to goo ourselves? Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. And remember this, True Crime Radio is a completely separate entity from websleuths.com, LLC, and forumsforjustice.org. In other words, my darlings, if you get upset at something you hear on this show, you come to me. You don't blame Web Sleuths or Forums for Justice, okay? Okay. He is a former senior investigative crime writer for Court TV's Crime Library. David Lohr also worked as a crime writer for Investigation Discovery, TLC, and AOL News. He has been writing about crime and criminals for more than 15 years. He is now the senior crime contributor on HuffingtonPost.com. I'd like to welcome David Lohr. David, welcome to Trisha's True Crime Radio.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
Well, we've been following you for years, David. I feel like we all know you because when you write something, you remind us of kind of a male Beth Karras in that you write the facts, you don't write hysteria, and we know what we get from you is the truth, and yet it's done in a creative and interesting way that keeps our attention because, at least with me, my attention span is about 5 seconds. I see a shiny object, and I'm like, whoa, what's that? So the way you write really keeps everybody's attention, and we do appreciate that. How did you get into the true crime genre of writing?
Well, ever since I was younger, I knew I wanted to be a journalist or a writer of some sort, and crime was also always an interest of mine. When everybody else was reading the G.I. Joes and stuff, I was reading the True Detective magazines. It was just something that always fascinated me. And I actually got my start with Court TV, the executive editor of the crime library there, Marilyn Barsley. She gave me a chance. She had me do an article on the BTK serial killer. And then it just kind of went from there. I worked for the crime library for about 10 years. And then, unfortunately, when Court TV turned into True TV, they pretty much did away with all the writers they had there. They don't do much of anything with the crime library anymore. And so that's when I went to Discovery and then, TLC, AOL, and then ultimately the Huffington Post now.
Let's talk about Court TV's crime library. That is that's a great place to go to get information. They have stories on everything. Court TV, was it just a ratings thing? Unless it was a really hot case, they just couldn't get the interest. Is that what happened there? Do you know?
Well, you know, it was a really popular network, and I think the issue is the president of the company, he came over from Hallmark or something like that, you know, a company that didn't have, had very little to do with crime, and he thought it would be better if they were more reality-based, so, you know, that's why they have that catchphrase now, it's not reality, it's actuality or whatever, mm-hmm. So, you know, he basically turned it into, and we're now to like a redneck channel or something.
It's like the Honey Boo Boo of true crime. True TV is. It's just wow. That's a great way to put it because it really is. I like a few things on there. I like their, you know, the top 20 they do where they have the comedians commenting on the dumb criminals. That's pretty funny, but that's about it. I miss the commentary, the interesting cases, and obviously you do too. You're at Huffington Post, and you're doing an amazing job there. Now, do you write your column? Is it once a day that you write something, once a week? I just go and try and find you every chance I get, and I don't know the schedule here.
It really depends on what I'm working on. You know, I could put out 3 or 4 articles a day. It could be, you know, one article a day or one every couple of days. It just depends on how big the case is and, you know, what I'm doing. Because people who remember when I was working for Court TV and stuff, a lot of that was mainly serial killers, mass murderers, and, you know, but over time, I think I had an interest back then. And, you know, what drives these people? What makes them tick? But over time, I just came to realize that, you know, unless you're that type of person yourself, I really don't think it's something you're able to comprehend or you're able to understand. So mm-hmm. I just kind of looked at that as a waste of time. And that's when I started getting more and more into missing persons, because that was something where I felt a difference could be made. You know, it's it's a lot of people say, well, you know, crime writing, that's blood money. Well, you know, I disagree with that. But at the same time, I think being able to cover the missing persons, get that type of information out there, you know, it's nice to be able to do something good.
Exactly. And you're absolutely right. We're talking with David Lohr. And if you're trying to get into the chat room tonight, the chat room is broken. You can log in, but nobody can type and talk. If you can type and talk, then you're lucky. Most of us can't. So Blog Talk Radio is working on that. And we're talking with David Lohr from the Huffington Post. And you're right, David. I've heard that, too, that, oh, you do this and it's just blood money. You make, you know, you make your living off people's pain. And that's not true. Like you, we try and do good. And I think the good comes from when you're able to spotlight a case of a missing person that normally wouldn't be spotlighted. And I know you've done that as well. What is the most bizarre case that just sticks in your mind that if you had to write down right now that pops into your head, what's the most bizarre case that you've ever worked on?
Gosh, you know, that's a hard question.
There's,
you know,
so many.
I mean, the one that stands out the most to me, and this is probably no shocker to people, is the Kaylee Anthony case, just because, you know, it went on for so long, and there was just there was so much outrage towards her, and it was such a bizarre case that, as it unfolded, you know, you thought one thing was going on, another was, and it was just so strange, and especially, you know, I was there on the ground during the search efforts. Mm-hmm. I was behind the scenes with Tim Miller. You know, we went out there and tromped the ground, and just like everybody else. So there was a real connection to that case. It wasn't where I was just, you know, sitting behind a computer making phone calls or anything. I was out there beating the pavement with him, trying to find this little girl and talking to people. So, you know, it's really really had a big impact on my life, I think that case did.
It had an impact on a lot of people's lives. It, for some reason, it grabbed the nation. It really did. Did you ever get a chance to talk with George or Cynthia, or excuse me, Cindy Anthony?
Yeah, I actually met with Cindy. It was while the searches were still going on. It was myself and Tim Miller and some of his staff members. We're at the Holiday Inn. It was a day after a real long search, and she came there to, you know, basically thank you for doing, you know, what you're doing. You know, obviously, she didn't believe that Kaylee was dead at that point or anything, but mm-hmm. she did come out to say thank you and was giving people hugs and things of that nature. So, but as far as George goes, he'd actually I went there during a vigil because, you know, I wanted to be there to support Kaylee and plus to try to talk to George and them. And he told me to get the F off his property. So that
he
never,
did?
never that, went anywhere. Yeah.
That never materialized. That interview did not happen. Well, I actually spoke with Cindy Anthony, and I won't get into all the details, but Cindy told me that, and that this, when you know Cindy Anthony and you've seen her behavior, this fits right in, that she was going to shut down the people on the internet that were talking about her daughter that used bad words to describe Casey, and she was going to shut it all down, is what she told me. And I said, Cindy, if there is a lawyer out there telling you that they can stop this, they are taking your money. I said, I guarantee you nobody can shut it down. If they call Casey a bad name, that's just someone's opinion. Doesn't mean it's right. I don't agree with it. We don't allow it on Web Sleuth ever. But she was absolutely convinced and determined that she was going to be able to basically shut down the internet discussion about Casey and win money in the progress. So process. So it was a very interesting but short conversation. She was very cordial. And I certainly hope she never gave any money to lawyers, I hope, because if she did, it was a total, total waste of time. You talked about the go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and, you know, one thing about the case, and, you know, a lot of people, they have their own theories on what happened. There's people that say that, you know, Casey killed Kaylee. Other people say it was an accident. You know, I mean, truly, we will never know exactly what happened. But in my opinion, you know, all this blame has been placed on Casey, and she deserves the bulk of it, don't get me wrong. But I think there's also blame on the part of her parents as well. If you look at the way this girl was raised and the things that they had put her through, I mean, they created who she became. And so I think there's, you know, a lot of guilt to go around there. It's not just on Casey herself.
I absolutely agree. They created the environment. They basically grew this woman, this person, into the woman she became. Perfect example of that is when they were at, I believe it was Cindy's brother's wedding, and Casey is 7 months pregnant, huge belly, little tiny gal, huge belly, and Cindy's going around telling everybody, oh, no, no, that's just water weight or whatever she said, denying she's pregnant. You know, when you hear stories like that, you're like, it's almost like Casey didn't have a chance. And I've always felt, and this is just my opinion, that although George does get a bad rap, I think he is just stuck. I think Cindy is such a powerful individual personality-wise, and she controls it. She controls it all. And I've always felt really bad for George, although, you know, when he gets angry at people, that's not a cool thing either. But I'm sure we will continue to hear from that family, and we'll continue to follow this story for, you know, 30, 40, 50 years from now, it'll still be talked about because it did grab the nation in that way, just like you said, David. You talked about one of your first cases was a BTK serial killer, and you kind of wanted to get into the mind of a serial killer, and you finally just decided, you know what, these people are this way because that's just the way they are, and there's nothing really we can do about it, and you're absolutely right. So do you think that, you know, there's this big argument now in the psychology circles, psychiatry circles, that, you know, nurture nature. Are they born that way? Are they born that way with a switch and something happens to kick that switch on in their childhood? Or are they wholly created by their environment? What do you think?
I think it's a combination of things. I don't think you can tie it all into just one thing. I mean, take, for instance, the case, you remember David Stainer from that movie, I Know My Name is David, and his brother ended up becoming a serial killer. And, you know, that was a very nice family, but he, at the same time, I'm sure while they were trying to find their other son, you know, he felt neglected and different things. So, you know, I think it's a combination of things that create these people. And, you know, it's both nurture and nature. And one thing that's interesting, too, when you mentioned the BTK was, you know, that was the first case I had done for Court TV. And then, you know, it was what, I think 10 years or so later when he was caught. And it was funny to me because when that case resurfaced, I was actually contacted by the FBI because they had mailed a copy of my article to them with a, I think it was a photocopy of a driver's license or something. And he had made a
correction. Oh, that's creepy.
Article.
Wow.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting. So I guess it all kind of came full circle there.
It did. You started out, you didn't know who he was, and it ends up he knows who you are and is mailing your articles to law enforcement. It did come full circle. I agree with you. I think it's a combination of both. I think it's very important, and this is one of the things I want to do on my radio show, and please, yes, let it go into syndication, pretty please, and that is to educate people how we can stop creating these monsters. And it does come down to how they're raised as children, and it does come down to child abuse and neglect and ignoring and, you know, physical abuse. There's all of these things. But about BTK, Dennis Rader, I could never find anything that showed he had a weird childhood. Somebody told me that he did kill animals and he wore women's clothing, but I couldn't find anything to indicate that he had been abused in any way. Did I miss it? Is there something out there that I'm not aware of?
No, I mean, there was nothing that really surfaced like that. But again, you know, you look at his age and the time period when all this happened, you know, stuff like that wasn't talked about back then. It was swept under the rug. So if any
True.
Of that did occur, you know, it's not surprising that we wouldn't hear about it.
I absolutely am convinced, and you can't convince me otherwise, that there was something traumatic while he was growing up. I have no idea what that would be, but it was traumatic enough to do this. Now, he was one of the unusual serial killers in that he stopped for, how long was it, 7 years, 10 years? He stopped for a long time between killings, right?
Yeah, that's correct. You know, but at the same time, we don't know what he did during that time period. You know, I think if he had committed other murders, that's something he would have copped to. I mean, he sang like a canary in court there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it would be interesting to find out from him what he did during that time period. Did he just keep reliving what had happened, or... You know, that like you said, that's something we don't see.
Well, that's, and what is interesting, the theory I have heard about BTK is he got that job, and I can't remember his title, but he'd go around and tell people their lawns needed to be mowed, and, you know, he was kind of an enforcer of
yeah.
the rules of the public. And the theory among people who do theories, I guess, is that that gave him, for a long time, enough power and control that he didn't feel the need to kill. Eventually, that need to kill came back. But when you've talked, you've probably maybe even interviewed some of these people, he harassed one woman about her dog nonstop because he, you know, she wouldn't take his crap, and he constantly harassed her, and he was just on her every second about her dog, about her lawn, and just making her crazy. And if I remember correctly, oh, boy, I hope I'm not getting this mixed up with another story. Something happened, and her dog was killed, and he was responsible. Like, it was picked up and taken to the shelter and immediately put down, and somehow he was responsible for it. So he had this kind of power that he could exert over people, that the theory being that was enough to keep him from doing anything. But you're right. I would love to know what he was doing, even what he was thinking between those times, because I don't know of any serial killer that we know of that stopped for that long unless they were in prison. And so he's kind of an aberration among aberrations, if you will, of serial killers. He's a fascinating topic to look at, but very tragic and absolutely terrifying monster of a human being. There's no doubt about that. Let's move on. Hannah Anderson, this is a very bizarre, strange case. I personally, I don't think it's that strange. I should say a lot of people feel it is. The family friend, James Lee DiMaggio, allegedly killed Hannah's mother and brother, burning down the house, and kidnapped Hannah Anderson. He picked her up from cheerleading camp. Now, he was a very close family friend, and supposedly there are letters back and forth between the two. The day that she was taken, they said 8 phone calls. Hannah said it was just 8 text messages about being picked up by Mr. DiMaggio. They ended up in Idaho, where she was rescued and he was killed. Now, DiMaggio's sister, very interesting lady, she says, she's hinting to me, anyway, it sounds like hinting, that it was Hannah who was in trouble, if you know what I mean. And her brother was, quote, just trying to protect her. DiMaggio's sister, her name's Lori, absolutely believes her brother to be completely innocent, and it was Hannah who did everything. People were complaining and pointing out that Hannah came back into the public light way too quickly and seemed okay. You wrote a little bit about this. What are your thoughts on Hannah Anderson?
Well, I think there's a lot more to this story that we don't even know about yet. I would certainly be interested to see the content of these letters that went back and forth. And, you know, if, as she says, these were text messages, it would be interesting to see the content of them. But I'm hesitant to believe that they actually were texts, because why would law enforcement come out and say they were called if, in fact, they were texts?
Right.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things in this case that just don't add up. And, you know, the fact that she was spared, he took her with her, you know, I don't know what his plans were at that point. But, you know, in my opinion, she knows a little more than she's let on.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people do feel that way. Perhaps, again, and I'm not suggesting this is true, this is just a theory that I'm throwing out there, perhaps there was some deeper relationship between the two. But I think they have, and quote me if, stop me if I'm wrong, David, I think they have pretty much been able to attribute the death of her mother and her brother to DiMaggio. Is that true, or are they just assuming he did it? Or do you know if there's hardcore evidence that ties them together? I'm not sure if you know any of this. I'm just going to put you on the spot and see if you do.
Well, this case had actually transpired while I was on vacation, so I don't know a lot of those type of details about it at this point. But, you know, the one thing that's interesting to me, too, is you know, I have nieces and nephews, and I think I have a pretty close relationship with them. But at the same time, I'm not sending them letters all the time and texts and phone calls and stuff. So, you know, it's just a lot of the behavior there kind of stood out as bizarre to me.
Well, it is. It's troubling. I mean, if that was my daughter and my close family friend was as old as DiMaggio and was contacting her like that, I'd put a stop to it because it was inappropriate and there was something else going on that shouldn't have been going on. That I think any parent would do. And you're right when you say there's more to it. What that is, though, I don't know, and that drives me crazy. Not knowing is what drives me crazy. For some reason, I feel I have a right to know everything. Just tell me and let's get it over with. But Hannah she's come out. She seems strong. She seems to be doing well. And because of that, people are criticizing her. I just don't know. This is one of those cases, David, that I just look at it and go, I don't know. I believe she was kidnapped. I believe she was rescued. But I don't know what happened before, during, or what is going through her mind now. And I do absolutely agree that there's more to this story. It may come out later. I'm sure the police are still investigating it. But if it does come out, I'm hoping you're going to write about it because you will tell us the truth without the drama and the rumor. So thank you for that. Let's move on. There is this case that just creeps me out. And you've written about it on the Huffington Post. We're talking with David Lohr. And it's the murder case of Brandi Stevens. Is it Rosin? Is that how you pronounce the last name?
I believe it's Rosin is how it was pronounced
Rosin.
To me on the phone.
Okay,
yeah.
Rosin. All I know is that they're saying that she could have been buried alive by two lesbian lovers. I mean, that's all I know. That's just what sticks in my mind. That is the worst, absolute worst thing you could do to someone, bury them alive. Tell us the background. What is going on with this bizarre tale and burying someone alive?
Well, what's really interesting to me about this case is I don't know if you remember the Shonda Cher case from back in the early 90s, mm-hmm. where there was kind of a lesbian love triangle there that resulted in a murder. This is somewhat similar. It doesn't involve as many teens as that one did, and the torture didn't go on as long, but it's certainly just as sick. Mm-hmm. This happened in Meadville, Pennsylvania, which is not too far away from where I grew up. And Brandi, she was dating Nicole Jade Olmstead. And Olmstead, they broke up, and Olmstead started dating this girl named Ashley Barber. She ended up moving in with her, but at the same time, she still kept in contact with Brandy. And, you know, obviously this caused some jealousy issues. And so we don't know exactly whose idea it was to come up with the plan of what they did, but they lured her to their house anyway. They got her out back, and they beat her very brutally. They knew that one of her fears was to be buried alive, so that was what they had done to her. After they finished beating her, they put her in a shallow grave, and they threw dirt on top, and when they did the autopsy, that's how they determined that she had suffocated. So, I mean, it's a really brutal, horrible case, and, you know, I'm sure there's tidbits I'm forgetting. You can go to the Huffington Post and read the story. It's certainly a very horrible story.
And now one of them, and I can't remember which one, has been found. I believe it is Ashley Marie Barber has been found competent to stand trial. Olmstead,
yes.
the jury is still out on that, or not the jury, but you know, they're still deciding. Is that correct? Are these women of very low IQs? What's the deal?
You know, I don't know that I would. I don't know that I have enough information to say that they're low IQ. I know they've been looked at by psychiatrists. You know, the psychiatrist felt that Ashley wasn't fit to stand trial, but at the same time, she met with her for a total of 3 hours. So that's awful quick to make that type of determination.
Right.
And the judge found her to be competent, and that trial is actually going to begin in November here. Unfortunately, in the state of Pennsylvania, they don't allow cameras in the courtroom, but I'm going to be attending that trial, and I'll probably either do a live blog or daily updates on it. We haven't really decided that yet, but I think it'll definitely be a fascinating trial, and I'm really surprised that none of the other outlets have picked up on it just because of how brutal of a crime it is.
Well, it's brutal, and it's got all the elements of I don't know, just titillating circumstances, lesbian lovers and the brutality of it all, and what are these two women really like, and what happened. Again, we can go back to what happened to them to create who they are that went on to do this horrible crime if they are found guilty. I certainly hope you'll check in with us when you are reporting out there, because that's something that we would all be very, very interested in. Let's talk a little bit about cases in the past. We've all seen the big ones, the JonBenets, like we talked about, the Casey Anthonys. Is there a case that just keeps you up at night, or kept you up at night because it was so wrong or so horrible, something that really bothered you and it was hard to let go of?
Well, there's a case that bothers me a lot, and I'm sure most people probably haven't even heard of it, but it was the Corey Anderson case. She went missing in Jamestown, New York. I want to say it was 08 or 09 now. And that was another case where I'd gone there with EquiSearch, and, you know, we had searched for this girl. Her husband was believed to be a person of interest in the case. Well, to start from the beginning, she came home from work. Something happened. She disappeared. 2 days later, her van was found abandoned in a field about a mile down the road from her house. She was in the process of getting a divorce at this time. There was a custody battle.
I remember this. And the boys were in the van, weren't they? Right. Okay. Right. I remember. Okay. Keep going.
Well, she's never been found. I mean, we did massive searches of that entire area, and she's just never been located. And to this day, we don't know where she's at. And what's interesting is the house was in foreclosure at the time, but she was living there. And after she disappeared, the man she was divorcing moved into the house, and now he still lives there at this point.
But no one's ever been arrested either, right?
No, no arrests have been made, and, you know, we have no idea where she's at.
Really, and what state was that?
Jamestown, New York.
New York.
Because I know the family, I mean, I didn't know them before this, but I came to know them as a result of this. And, you know, it's horrible to see people go through this. And, you know, when I do all these cases and everybody says the worst part of it is the not knowing. And, you know, in cases like this that aren't solved, that's what those families have to deal with every day. You know, when we're sitting down at Thanksgiving with our family, you know, they're sitting there staring at an empty chair. So it's certainly a life-changing thing.
Absolutely nothing more horrendous than not knowing where your loved one is. You're assuming they're dead, and your imagination and your mind would run wild. If you're in the chat room, normally I take questions from the chat room, but they're having some technical issues on Blog Talk Radio. You can call in if you'd like. The number is 760-825-0933. That's 760-825-0933. Feel free to call in. We're talking with David Lohr, and we were just talking about the Corey Anderson case. That's kind of the one that really bothers you and keeps you up. How long ago was that?
I want to say that was 08 or 09. Yeah, you know, I cover so many of these cases, so sometimes the details get mixed together, but I know it was around that time period. And, and equally so, right around the time she went missing, I don't know if you remember Kelly Sue Akronat. That was another New York case, and she's never been found. And, you know, we went on searches for her. So it's those cases where there's no answer. Those are all the ones that stand out.
And like you said, you've gotten to know the families, and you know their heartbreak, especially over the holiday season. You've mentioned Tim Miller. Do you do most of your searches with Tim Miller then?
I used to do most of the searches with Tim. You know, I followed him around the country for, gosh, a long time there when I was with the Discovery Channel. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it got to where we didn't exactly see things eye to eye. I mean, Tim's, I think he has a good heart and everything like that, but we disagreed on how some cases were handled, and so I no longer do that with him. There's other groups out there I will go on different searches with nowadays, but I don't, it's not like it used to be.
Right. Well, there's Laura Recovery Center. There's a Class Kids Search Organization. Web Sleuths does a lot with them. We help with getting food to the searchers. People don't realize what goes into a search. It's not just showing up and, you know, heading out. You have to have food. You have to have registration. You have to have legal places, papers. You have to have a place to do it at. It's quite an ordeal to get going, and you usually get it up and running within 24 hours of the crime. And I'm sure you've seen how it's been put together, right, David?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And you know, a lot of this has become a passion of mine, too, where, you know, I've bankrolled some searches. I've gone out and I've helped be a search coordinator on searches. You know, it's not just a job. I don't look at it as just a job. A lot of these cases I get personally involved in, you know, just because you can't help but get drawn into them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You would be inhuman. You would be a robot if you couldn't get drawn into them. Let's talk about true crime and reporting true crime. First of all, I want to give out the number again if you have a question for David Lohr. I know a lot of you do, and you're in the chat room, and it's not working, and I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you. It's so frustrating. The number to call in is 760-825-0933. To talk with David Lohr and ask us your question. But true crime reporting has really changed a lot. Court TV is the first one that really brought it to the forefront. Before that, David, we basically had Ann Rule, Greg Olson, and a few other people to give us our books, and then we would see the movies of the week, and then Lifetime Television for Women came on, and that was a godsend because you got all the true crime movies that you could want in your life. But now it seems like there is true crime everywhere. There is true crime, you know, every time you turn on the Discovery Channel, they've repackaged it and renamed it something else. You know, My Evil Twin, The Evil Sisters, you know, I'm stabbing people. It's just so bizarre how they repackage it. It's really become a money-making industry for the networks and cable channels and magazines and books, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. And one of the things that really bothers me, you know, it's so mainstream now. You have all these people coming out now calling themselves crime writers and stuff. But if you'll notice with a lot of these people, there's such a lack of empathy, so to speak. I mean, I'll see cases where the headline, just for instance, will be, you know, Jane Doe missing. Was she hunted down and gutted alive? Or, you know,
oh,
I mean, that's an exaggeration. But
right, but I know what you mean.
Where they put these suggestions, where they put these suggestions out there. And, you know, it's like, what are you thinking? There's nothing to back that up at all. You're just sensationalizing.
Right.
And at the same time, how do you think the family feels when they
to
see
read
that? I mean, obviously, because you know they're out there looking for any information they can find that might help them. And it's, you know, it's like these people have no sensitivity towards the families. You know, it's all about the shock value, because the shock value brings you the numbers and the traffic. But, you know, it's ridiculous. And that's why, you know, I've always refused to... Oh, I don't know, like glorify the crimes, you know, or make them out to be more than what they are. It's just, it's ridiculous. I like to stay more fact-based, and, you know, I certainly don't want to put anything out there that's harmful to a family.
And that's why we love you, David Lohr, and that's why I've been trying to get you on this show forever, because of how you write. We appreciate that many of us follow these cases, and we only have the media to turn to, and the sensationalism, like you said, of taking a horribly tragic situation and turning it into a headline that is gruesome or that is insensitive. You have to wonder how people can sleep at night. And you know, the truth be damned, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. That's another problem with a lot of these true crime shows. And I'm going to name names right now. Aphrodite Jones did a horrible show about the JonBenet Ramsey case. They haven't shown it since, thank God, because it was so filled not only with errors, but lies and out and out just made up crap. It was so outrageous. I actually wrote a letter, not that anybody cared, but I couldn't believe it. That somebody that was supposed to be this great true crime author was doing her show on the Discovery Channel, and she put out something that did not resemble the truth of the case. Another one is Nancy Grace. She will come out and say something is fact, and it's not even close to fact. And I used to love Nancy. She was wonderful. I was her champion. I thought she was the greatest lady. And I have lost respect for her because of how she sensationalizes things that don't need to be sensationalized, and how she presents what she says is the truth a lot of times is rumor, and she presents it as fact. Those are just two examples, but the problem is, David Lohr, is both of those people have the power to reach the masses. And the masses are not like you and I and the people listening to this show now. They don't take the time, and understandably so, just like I don't take the time to find out all the ins and outs of the Wall Street stories and all of that. They don't take the time to find out what is real and what is not. They base what they hear, they base their ideas and their perceptions on what they hear from people like Nancy Grace. And that is a big problem. Do you see that? Do you agree, disagree? Talk to me.
Oh, no, certainly I agree. And, you know, I think as a journalist, whenever you're covering these types of cases, I think there's a very fine line you have to walk. I mean, it's like I was talking about earlier how I was going on these searches and behind the scenes. I mean, there's so many times, you know, I've given up what other people would think. Man, that's a huge scoop. But, you know, if somebody asks me not to put something out there, I don't put it out there. You know, I mean, that could hinder the case. It's certainly not going to win me any friends. And, you know, in the long run, it's going to damage your reputation. So, I mean, there's a lot of times I pass on cases that, you know, could have really big scoops. But that's a line you have to walk, you know, if you want to do this job and maintain your integrity.
And have you found that that has interfered with your ability at all, to where somebody has said, you can't say this, and because you do have ethics, you don't, and you're and perhaps maybe, I'm not even saying the people at Huffington Post, but perhaps in your past, the people have said, hey, you got to give us something more juicy. Have you found that your ethical stance interferes sometimes with the powers that be?
It hasn't with the Huffington Post. They've actually been really great, and I'm not just saying this because I'm with them now, but they have been really great about kind of letting me do my own thing. You know, most of the cases I do now, I would say probably 80% of them are missing persons, and, you know, they're not pushing me in one direction or the other. But, you know, there has been other companies I've worked for, you know, I don't want to name any names, but, you know, who have asked me to do things or write things a certain way that might be more sensational. They might get bigger, higher numbers or more traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's something I've always stood firm on. I've never given in to that. And, you know, I'm sure I've had a lot of editors in the past cuffing me because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just something I'm not willing to give in to that.
Thank you. On behalf of everybody who is interested in the facts in a true crime case, thank you. God, it's so refreshing to hear that. We do have a question. Now, David, I have to warn you. I don't have call screening. Sometimes we get weirdos on the phone. It can be entertaining, scary, frightening, and just plain annoying. Usually, they're fantastic people. So, let's just take this caller. Area code 705. You're on the air with David Lohr from the Huffington Post. What's your comment or question?
Hi, David. It's Cheryl Bullock calling from Ontario.
Hi.
Did you start by reading mystery books when you were a kid? Like, did you?
Yeah. Well, it's like I said earlier. I've always had an interest in writing. I'd actually started out writing poetry. You know, poetry I look back on now and I think, man, that was dark. You know, that was how I started out with the poetry, and I always wanted to get into writing. And, you know, and like I said, when the other kids were reading their comic books and stuff, I was drawn to the, you know, the old True Detective magazines. I mean, you remember the ones with, like, the scantily clad woman holding a knife on the cover or something. And,
those
were freaky.
It was
I started with the Hardy Boys.
Yeah, and
Drew.
You know, it was those type of stories that intrigued me, and you know, I remember way back then. I'm sure you guys are probably familiar with Gary King. He used to write for a lot of those magazines, and you know, it just really piqued my interest, and I think that's what kind of led me towards true crime.
Yeah, we had a murder in our family too.
What
so
happened?
It was both my nephews.
Oh, my gosh.
The 16-year-old murdered the 14-year-old. Over nothing but jealousy.
Oh, dear.
Oh,
that's just tragic.
It is, but, you know, you're given what you can handle, right?
Mm-hmm. That is true.
So,
well, thank you for calling in. Do you have any other questions or comments for David Lohr?
No, that's good.
Okay. Well, thank you, my dear. I do appreciate it. Again, our chat room is broken. And they are trying to fix it right now, and I'm sure they'll get it fixed when we have about 30 seconds left, because that's just how it usually goes. So if you'd like to call and ask David Lohr a question, 760-825-0933. David, how in the world would somebody be able to get into the true crime writing business in this day and age? What could they do?
You know, it's funny. I get that email from people all the time. I probably get 10 of those a month from people who want to get into true crime. And, you know, the truth of the matter is, as much as the future of true crime, a lot of it, I want to say, is in TV, video, things like that, because there's not a lot of newspapers or, you know, magazines or online outlets that really put a lot into true crime. I mean, most of what we're seeing now is in television, movies, things of that nature. Even if you look at the book side of it, everything is going to e-books now. And, you know, it's Jack Olson used to tell me, you don't want to get into this. It's a dying genre. You know, you don't want to get involved in this. Well, luckily, I was able to prove I'm wrong in that respect.
Yeah.
But I do think trying to make a living doing it online, it's not easy. You know, I've been fortunate in finding a lot of great companies to work with, but it's certainly not easy to get into it.
Are you going to write a book?
You know, I get asked that question all the time.
Mm-hmm. See, I've talked to these people that talk to you all the time. I know what to ask.
Yeah, you know, I've had offers. I've had publishers approach me. I think it's more of like a time constraint thing more than anything. I'm so busy with these cases. And this one other thing I'd like to point out, too, that you might see or that you might recognize. When you look at these cases in the media now, everybody puts, according to CNN, or this person told MSNBC, or, you know, nobody does their own reporting anymore. It's all aggregation. They take little tidbits from here and there, and they put it all together, and, you know, it boggles my mind. It's like, you know, pick up the damn phone. How
and
hard
call
is
the
it
source.
To,
call the source yourself, sure.
Yeah. You know, how hard is it to interview these people and to do a little bit of old school detective work? I mean, come on, but it's like people are so lazy now. And a lot of that, I think, is having to do with, oh, we got to be the second person to have it out there, the third person to have it out there. And it's ridiculous. And, you know, I'll even see with my own work, you know, one thing that really irritates me is, you know, say I have a case, I've spent a week interviewing people and, you know, doing all this research on, I'll put it up online, and then within 2 hours, another outlet there has, you can tell they've, like, raped half of my article. There's no mention of me. There's no mention of the Huffington Post, no links, and, you know, it's ridiculous. A lot of journalists are just lazy now.
That's uncool, it's unprofessional, and it's just flat out wrong. If you could write a book, let's say you had time, you could sit back, you know, with a nice margarita on the beach, you had plenty of time, you had somebody there to take the dictation, you didn't have to lift a finger, what would you write the book about? That's my fantasy, never having to lift a finger again. I throw that in everywhere. So what would you write about?
Well, you know, my passion is missing persons, and, you know, it'd be something centered around that. I mean, for example, one thing I think there's a real need for is you have these families when somebody goes missing, and every time I interview them, it's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, who to talk to or anything. And, you know, it would be nice if there was some kind of comprehensive guide that you can consult. And I mean, you have little Word documents here and there on different missing person websites, but it would be nice to have a comprehensive guide where it would just help them through the process, you know, because there's people, I mean, I'm sure you've heard of, like, the 18-wheeler campaign where they put the missing posters up. You know, most people, a lot of them, they don't even know about something like that. They could make a world of difference in their case.
I definitely
think there needs to be more awareness.
Absolutely. There's a woman that I'm helping now. A huge case 26 years ago. Her family friend walked out the door with her 7-month-old baby, came back less than 5 minutes later and says, I don't know what happened to the baby. And she was never charged because she was found mentally incompetent. Well, the mother thinks that the baby is now a 26-year-old woman. She doesn't think she was killed. And she can't get any media to help her. And it's absolutely shocking. Here is an incredible story that they could work on, and nobody will help her because it's not sexy enough. We're helping her, and I think we can get some great media on this, because it does have an interesting twist, but she can't. She's tried to pick up the phone and talk to people, and it just won't. No one cares. It's a Melissa McGuinn story, and her mother Becky McGuinn is trying to. I'll send you the info on it, David. But it's just appalling. Okay. Here is a woman who you would think that everybody would jump at this, but because she's poor, she doesn't have the resources. She's ignored, and that's a real tragedy. Your passion is missing persons. We, in the past 10 years, there have been missing people that, let's face it, we thought were dead, flat out thought were dead. And Elizabeth Smart, Amanda Berry, the two boys that were found together. My mind is a blank. Sean Hornsback. You know, people that were taken, that you assumed were dead, and they were being held against their will. Don't you feel now, and I do, that there's a lot more of that out there now, and the people that we may think are dead, are living somewhere else, and maybe under the control of these sick but masterful people who have a way to physically restrain them for years and years and years until they're mentally broken down. That's not that far out anymore, don't you think?
Oh, no, I'm sure there are cases like that out there, but I mean, at the same time, if you look at how many people go missing every year, I would say the percentage that would fall in that category would be very minute.
Mm-hmm. Well, what it does, I think, is it gives hope to people, their loved ones, that just maybe they might be one of the minute group where their child is still alive. There's so, like you said, there are so many, there's thousands of kids, especially teenagers, that go missing. And you probably feel this way too. When a child goes missing, just because they ran away doesn't mean they're not endangered. Because they left
exactly.
On their own, they're still endangered. And that's what people don't understand. And when they hear that it's a runaway, nobody seems to care. And that's very, very frustrating. You say you've been out on a lot of searches. Have you ever found something that turned the case around?
We had a recovery in Cleveland, Ohio. It was actually the very last search I went on with Tim Miller. Mm-hmm. And there was a gentleman who was missing. After they found his car was wrecked, he was nowhere to be seen. Law enforcement couldn't find him. So we went down there. We were searching the creeks and everything, breaking up the ice along the way. And, a big chunk of ice floated away, and there he was in the water. So that was a successful find. But, at the same time, it's not an easy thing to be there for. But, it's better than the family not knowing.
Exactly. And everybody you talk to, they would rather know than not know all those years. One of Ted Bundy's victims, Debbie Kent's mother, kept her porch light on for Debbie. She was never found. And she died leaving her porch light on, and because it just absolutely, absolutely destroyed her. Well, David, Laura, you're a busy man, and you have taken a big chunk of your day out to talk with us. I certainly appreciate you. And I want you to know, on behalf of all of the posters on the internet that enjoy true crime, we all appreciate you so much and everything you do. I hope you'll come back on again, and especially if we're out and about covering
definitely.
A case. We would love to have you on anytime. I can do a show anytime, and I can make it 3 hours long if I want to. So you're always welcome back. And if there's anything we can do to help with the searches, perhaps, that you might be going on, don't hesitate to call us. We have a big army of people standing by saying, what can I do to help? So don't hesitate to ask, okay?
Yeah, and before I go, there is one positive thing I would like to point out as far as journalism today. And
absolutely.
And I'm sure you've seen this too, where, even 2 or 3 years ago, it was so hard to get coverage for an older person, for a male, for an African American.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost impossible. And that was something I really pushed for, was to try and get as many of those cases out there as I could. And now we're slowly starting to see where the tide is changing there. I mean, I have Google alerts set up for missing persons, and every day now I'm seeing reports on missing Alzheimer's patients. We're seeing a lot more coverage towards the African Americans and the males, and so I think that tide is slowly changing, and I think that's a good thing.
It is a good thing, and it's slowly changing because of people like you, David Lohr, who are out there working behind the scenes to get it changed. And I agree with you. That's almost an epidemic, missing older persons, African Americans, people of color. It seems, we've said this all along for years, it's the pretty white girl that gets all the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And there's lots of other people of all different colors, ages, and male and female that need our help too. So, David Lohr, thank you very much. You can check out David Lohr at www.huffingtonpost.com. David, we'll talk to you again real soon, okay?
All right, thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Oh, he was a great guest. Wasn't he amazing? And I'm telling you, I am not feeling the love tonight, other than from David Lohr. He was absolutely perfect. First of all, the chat room doesn't work, and I can see all of you in line in the chat room, and I'm sure you had brilliant questions that I had no clue and didn't ask David Lohr. And Michael from Minnesota, my official unofficial co-host, didn't call in. And, you know, I will give him hell, and he will feel the guilt, the pain of guilt for years and years to come for abandoning me. Okay, here's the deal, kids. I don't think I'm going to do a show Sunday. I'm going to take Sunday off. It is a holiday weekend. So this is officially your Sunday show for Trisha's True Crime Radio. And do remember this. Opinions expressed on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests. So if you hear something you don't like, you don't blame WebSleuth.com, LLC, or ForumsForJustice.org. You come to me, Trisha, on Trisha's True Crime Radio. And again, no show Sunday, but we will be back a week from Sunday discussing true crime and current events, and we'll always do it with common sense. Goodbye, everybody.